The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 270 for Wednesday, April 20th, 2011. My name is Jim Race. I am here with Jules Cisek, both of us in California. Good evening, Jules.
Hey, how's it going, Jim?
It's going quite well. We've got a few interviews this week, don't we, sir?
Yes, we do.
Fire when... Oh, wait. Okay, go ahead.
Well, we're going to be talking to Mark Miller, who I guess you interviewed for last week, but we had so many interviews already, we didn't want to dilute everybody. So
well, it's not necessarily that. It's like Mark needs to stand alone in a way.
Well, that's what I mean. Well, somebody was going to get diluted by either by having Mark next to him or, you know.
Indeed. And he's actually, I think right about now, he's probably, if he hasn't already, is touching down at the Isle of Man for a promo gig that he's doing over there prior to the TT. He'll be coming back afterwards. I think he's going to spend 4 or 5 days over there. So you guys will hear it in the interview.
Okay. And then we're going to have a chat with, well, I was at the AFM races this weekend at Infineon Raceway. And, man, it was packed. It's like, I think the first weekend is always, at Infineon, is always just insanely packed because, well, this is actually what Ed was saying is, you know, nobody's on vacation yet. And it was a beautiful day. I don't think I've seen it that packed even on AMA weekends, you know?
Yeah. I was actually kind of pumped because I saw, at least on the Bay Area Riders Forum, aka BARF, some great promotion going on from Clymer and a few other people. And it's that kind of promotion that club racing needs, build from within. So good job for you guys. And I did hear it was quite full as well on Sunday.
Yeah, it was amazing. And so I hung out with Ed Hazer, who's a longtime listener to the show, and with his crazy... Z1, man. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to describe. I took some pictures of him and you know, push starting his the bike, and they're on Facebook. And but I'm just amazed that a 1975 motorcycle gets, he basically rebuilds the engine every year himself, you know, and then races the thing for the season and. Does quite well, and especially in the Super Dino class. Although I guess this year Super Dino has, you know, like R1s and stuff, so he's got a lot of competition. But still, he in the morning Super Dino race, he was running fifth, but they black flagged it, and so they called it back a lap, and he ended up 6 out of 17 or something like that. So.
Awesome. He does have some nice kit on it, though. I saw upside down forks, which I don't think the original Z1 ever had.
Oh, no. I mean, that thing is a hodgepodge of a lot of interesting parts, definitely.
Serious Frankenbike. Well, it's a little bit different than the triple he used to race when I used to chat with him. And it's funny because I don't think Ed ever remembers me chatting with him, and we used to talk about triples back in the day. I also had a chat today with James Whittam. We talked a bit about World Superbike. We had some – his phone was a little bit hinky, and so we couldn't quite get everything in. I do have a little bit of a conversation to pass along. You guys mainly talking about he and Carl Fiarty's chat tour and a little bit of other stuff, so you get a chance to hear that as well.
Cool. Very cool. Before I forget, also shout out to the Grice brothers.
Yes, absolutely. Both Nick and Todd.
Yep.
Did he hand the stickers off?
Oh yeah.
So did those get sported in any races yet?
I don't know. I didn't want to ask.
I'll wait the photos. If not, we'll get some, and I'm sure Todd or Ed or Nick will post them on the Motopod fan page on Facebook.
Sweet. So okay, so we're gonna just do a very quick chat. This is me talking to Ed at AFM on Sunday.
And club racing at its finest.
Yep. Okay, this is Jules, and I'm here with Ed Hazer.
Hi, everybody.
At the AFM round at Infineon on April 17th. How's it going, Ed?
Pretty good. So you were you just finished your second race of the day?
Yeah.
You did the dinosaur class, super dino class.
Dinosaur morning, class is, first, yeah.
What's the formula this year?
1999 is the cutoff year, so you
99 can, already.
1999 okay. or older.
Okay.
So.
And is there a limit to how old the bike can be?
No. I think I'm the limit. This is 75.
This is 75.
You see one?
Like 1,000.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice. And how'd you do in the dinosaur class? You guys got black flag, you said.
Yeah,
right?
We got black flagged just after the middle of the race, and then they call it a full race if it gets past the midway point. But I finished sixth.
Almost fifth, you said?
Well, if I would have had the rest of the race, I would have gotten the fifth. Nice. I don't know if I could get past him, but I would have given it a good go.
And then you had the superbike race, which is pretty much everybody.
Open superbike, right? Unlimited CCs, all the new stuff. You know, right. I'm the only old guy out there.
Yeah, there were a bunch of guys actually standing in turn 11. They were going, that guy's insane.
Yeah, probably.
So what's next? Where are you going next after this round?
Well, they have another round here in 3 weeks, but I'm not sure if I can make it. You know, financially, I'm going on vacation with my daughter to Europe. In June,
I should mention your daughter is the pit crew here.
Yep. Helmet cleaner.
Yeah, we watched her do the helmet. That was
race
great.
Stand hander and, you know, whatever else is around.
And something's going on over there. You can pause if you want.
You need any help? I'll be done in just a second, sweetie.
I noticed that by following you on Facebook that you were working on your motor last weekend. This is what you do every year, you said?
Yeah.
Everything is you do yourself, right?
Except for, like, the valve work and the head porting. That I don't do, the cylinder boring. You know, you need machinery that's way too expensive to buy, you know, just for a few times.
Right.
But other than that, all the assembly and disassembly is all...
And you've had this bike since when?
Since this one was put together in 1999, like this.
Sweet. It's crazy looking.
It's crazy to ride it too, but it's fun.
It looks almost like it belongs on an oval, you know, dirt track or something. Sometimes the way you ride it, especially.
Maybe I'm running on the wrong track.
What other rounds are you going to try to attend this year?
Well, the next one I'm not sure about. There's another one the weekend prior to me going to Europe. Maybe not a smart move to race that one, but I might do it at Thunder Hill.
Well, cool. All right. Well, thanks very much, and it was fun hanging out with you today.
Yeah, it was fun having some people over here.
Right on.
Excellent. Had a good time.
All right. So thanks, Ed. The really funny thing was I brought my GoPro. He had a GoPro on the front of the bike, and I brought my GoPro along, and we ended up sticking it under his rear fender. So mm-hmm. So we get like, you know, the tire shot going up and down and whoever's behind him, and then we tied it with it was, you know, he had a mount that he screwed in, and then a long extension arm that I stuck in there, and we thankfully zip tied it, because like I think 4 or 5 laps into the superbike race it broke, and
uh-oh.
And I was looking at the footage this morning, and we have a gyro cam.
Really?
Yeah, it's like it's rotating with the horizon. It's totally hilarious. I mean, it's an awful gyro cam, but it's a gyro cam.
it's a Renault de Punier on a bad day gyro cam.
Maybe. There you go.
totally appreciate that from Ed, and I think we should probably rip into it because it is going to be a long one, yep. As they normally are. A chat with Mark Miller. And kind of catches us up with what's going. Fire when ready, Jules.
I know. It's been too long. All right.
I know.
Here's Mark.
Jim Race here with Motopod. I have Véronique Fleurot, Super Isle of Man TT racer, and her pit bitch, Mark Miller, on the line with me. How are you doing?
Good.
Go fuck yourself. I'm kidding. I've never been an umbrella girl before. That would actually be kind of easy.
Yeah, I don't think you have the legs for it.
No.
they're mismatched.
Dude, your wrists are bigger than my calves. Trust me.
which is not saying much. Vero is on the Isle of Man, a destination I will be reaching soon, along with one Mark Miller. And this is kind of a chance to do a pre-TT talk, but also it's been way forever, and I'm been missing talking to Mark as well as you, Vero. So a chance to catch up. How you guys doing?
Very well, very well. Back on the island now, and it's really beautiful here. You will love it here.
I bet.
I can't wait for the TT now to have all the excitement.
Is it a little quiet over there?
Oh, yes, quiet. But the weather has been absolutely amazing and makes a big difference.
Are you back at work now?
Soon, hopefully.
And Mark, apparently you're going to get back to work soon over at the Isle. I know that you're trying to get all of your plans solidified, what bike you're going to be riding, what teams you're going to be working with. Anything to tell us on that front?
The only thing I know at the moment is I will most likely have secured the Motosys bike, the A bike for the TT0. So that's going to be fun because it'd be nice to break that 100 mile an hour mark if at all possible. I've also got some things in the works for the gas powered stuff. It's out of my hands. It's being negotiated, but I've got a contract with the TT people now signed. So I'm in. It's just a matter of what to ride. We've got a good idea what might happen. I'll probably know this week. It's always like this. It always takes the last minute. But if we get what I think we're going to get, it'd be kind of fun. There's a couple little quirks about this particular effort that would be entertaining, I think, to not only do but to watch.
Cool. And you've already got a number assigned, number 20, right?
Yep. I mean, number 20, Aaron Yates.
Indeed. And you did say something there. You know that I am astute enough to catch up on this. You said the Michael Cis number A bike. That implies a B bike exists.
Well, you're going to have to ask him, I suppose. I don't know what's been made public, but I know that there was...
Nothing. I poked and prodded at him, and he's like,
I think that there's some chat about doing a second bike, and I know the situation. Maybe I shouldn't talk about it, but you know, at the end of the day, it's we're going to have a nice, solid effort. There's a new title sponsor on board with the team, and I'm sure they're excited to announce that. And it's actually kind of a cool sponsor. It's one that makes sense and fits. And certainly, if we get to talk again before the TT starts rolling, you know, I can chat a little bit more about their new sponsor. But I'll let that be their announcement, I suppose.
Okay. Something like Ever Ready?
Right? No, the Energizer Bunny's a lot cuter, I think. I mean, I've always had kind of an eye on that little rabbit.
That's the first time you're going to get in trouble with Bureau.
Baby.
I'm still here. I'm listening.
It's like 1:30 in the morning over there. She's fading, trust me.
Yes, I will.
Well, you know, Vero, you can let us go at any time, or you can sit here and we'll be your alarm clock if we go on for hours and hours.
Baby, if you fall asleep, please don't fart, okay? Because we're going to hear it.
Okay, I go on mute.
You know, I've known her since 2006, and I have not heard this woman fart one time yet. I don't know where she hides them, but it's a pretty good record she's got for that whole pedestal thing. I mean, what is that? Fucking 2006 to now is how many years? Five? Not a single peep out of her bum.
So are we talking like a 25,000 to nothing
nice
ratio?
Thank you.
Yeah. I tell her I love her in certain ways that she likes, you know.
I should start taking lessons or at least find the proper French girl living on this tiny island with nobody to compare you to.
Right? That's why I sent her back to the prison, because she won't, you know, be able to actually compare to anybody that's worthy of her.
Oh, dear. I don't know where to go from here, but I do. Of course, I will always find a path back to something that makes even slight sense. At this point, Mark, you're probably getting yourself more into preparation mode, starting to kind of think of it. Although I know that you kind of like to leave things off until the last bit before you really start buckling down. Anything that you're doing as far as training and stuff, getting ready to go?
Yeah, what we're doing at the moment, we've got about 7 weeks left. So that's a little bit of time to really start fine tuning at the last minute. So what we'd start doing is start riding in the canyons a bit more. We'll get the wrist and the lower back and all the stuff that we can get actually riding a motorcycle for hour upon hour. That's soon to come. The thing is, you don't want to do that too early, because you expose yourself to the potential jail time you might get not allowed to attend the event at all. So you kind of want to limit it till it's going to be most effective. If I start doing it too early, then I'll peak, and then it's just more risk. You know, every moment you're out on that motorcycle, you're risking something. So not only just the cops, but I had a car do a freaking U-turn the other day right in front of me, and I mean, didn't even look. And I was like, whoa, man, that's one that, you know, you could chat about later. It says, yeah, that's one of those moments where completely unexpected on a public road is very dangerous. But starting to eat better, starting to eat less. I'm not a big guy anyway. I'm kind of a medium guy, but I'm definitely starting to get a little bit more of the proteins, less of the carbs, because I want to lighten up for the race coming up.
But you, and I want, mm-hmm. you got to weigh what, about $160, $170?
I am under 170 typically. I used to be in the AMA series when I was a bit younger. It was high 150s. Now I'm about mid 160s. Something okay. like that. But for the endurance, to be fair, for the 2 weeks of racing at the TT, you cannot show up like Nikki Hayden looks right now. I mean, you cannot right. be a bicyclist that has a skinny little neck and no arms and you look like, you know, you're an Ethiopian or something. It just wouldn't work. You need the reserves. You got to have some kind of bulk to you. But you don't want to be so bulky that it puts you to sleep, you know, your neck and your arm pump and all that stuff. You got to be limber but not tiny. You can't be scrawny, you know?
Yeah, you doing it. Are you doing any cardio? I would imagine that might actually be rather helpful at the CT.
Yeah, that's ramping up. We're going to be doing that more and more each day. The plan right now is that I should be flying out a week from today, which is Saturday. So next Saturday, I'll fly out to the press junket, come back on the Wednesday, and from that Wednesday till, you know, approaching the 30th of May, that will be working out. Full-time job.
Okay, so do they actually fly you over for that?
They do. That's the nice. Plan, yeah. Yeah, I haven't got the itinerary in my hand, but I've got the itinerary on an email that says, would this work? And I said yes, and I'm just waiting to hear back. So they want me to be their little poster child for the electric bike race. And if they can announce this other thing that we're doing, if it works out, it's kind of a cool little extra angle. Like there's – for the senior TT, you can run any bike.
Yeah.
Basically. And they've had Nortons. They've had – you know, they had the MotoGP bike over there for an exhibition with Cameron Donald, the Rizzlers thing. And they like to do stuff special for the seniors. So anyway, it looks like I may get the nod to do a bit of a PR stunt, which is not necessarily the best thing in the world for a racer. Because if, for instance, let's just for the sake of argument, say I'm riding a BMW for the Superbike opening 6 laps, for the Superstock 4 laps. And then just if I'm going good, which I do not predict anything because who knows who's going to show up this year in myself. But if we were to do those 10 laps and actually get to where it's comfortable, because we rode a BMW last year, and if we can get the notes from last year and then improve on it, it's going to be hard to step off the BMW for the big finale, because usually your last lap of the whole fortnight could potentially be your fastest ever, you know, in the history, in your, you know, in all the 6 tries you've been over there for. So having said that, though, I think it might be fun if this all comes to pass. I know I'm speaking in code, but to ride a special unique motorcycle for the senior, I think would be cooler than doing slightly better on the bike I'm comfortable with, which is what everybody else is going to be doing. Because, you know, I've ridden the electric bike, and now if I can ride something else special, it's one more little notch that says, what a cool experience. You know, I'm lucky.
You know, there's one bike that pops in my head when you say that, and one that was going to be coming back to the island. We'd talked about, and it had been heard about, which is the Norton NRV 588 Rotary. And you don't have to say anything, but damn, it'd be cool if you landed up on one of those.
Yeah, it's nothing like that. It's 180 degrees from that. It's not some older thing.
This is not an older thing. This is a newer kick-ass, like well, since it's not that, then you don't know, but I'll send you some info on that particular bike, because this is a current iteration and pretty much a completely main-y off the hook bike. Full GP spec stuff with just a crazy current modern quote-unquote 588 rotary engine, which who knows what that works out to in actual CCs, because you cannot measure the rotaries to a modern, you know, piston port bike.
What kind of horsepower does it have, do you think?
All I know is it can turn the pipes red when it's on them. they turn bright.
So it's like 15,000 RPM or some weird thing.
Yeah, bright beat red. And all of a sudden you're like, I want one of those. They were supposed to be back at the TT 2 years ago, and they didn't come back. And frankly, the Norton story has been kind of a drag because we get a lot of those teasers. Oh, we're gonna hit this race, we're gonna hit that race, and then they don't show. And at this point, it's kind of people are prepared for disappointment, if you will.
So I heard you spoke to Ben Spies.
I did. I talked to him a couple hours ago. It was a very cool call. You know what's funny is we talked mostly, and as people will already have heard, because they'll have heard it in the show, about bicycle racing off the bat, because he has a cycling team that he's put together that is like super top elite, and these guys are kicking ass big time.
That's super cool.
Yep.
I mean, who else is going to do it with professional road racers? I mean, they are the Ben Spies and the Nicky Haydens in the world, not myself, but those guys are, I mean, you know, it doesn't get any better than that. Come on. I mean, we're the top of the line, athletes on the planet. Who could beat us? You know, like who could beat a fucking motorcycle road racer? Come on. Let's be honest. I mean, we manipulate machines at 180 mile an hour left and right. I mean, and we got the fitness, we got all the things. Like F those guys, you know, like I'm so stoked to see Ben Bostrom doing well on that stuff. Nicky Hayden's doing well on that stuff. And now Ben Spies has got a team that's kicking ass.
Yeah.
Well, why not us? You know?
Well, I asked him too. I said, so can you actually write this off as in taxes? You know, get 12 trainers now.
Yeah. Right.
But, no, it is very cool. And it's, he's doing it along with some charity work for that. And it's great to see some interesting philanthropic work. I mean, you know, if you hit that top edge in motorcycle road racing, think about it, Mark. Think about all the kids, or parents, frankly, that are, you know, trying to get their kids into this sport. And ultimately, a kid grows up, says, I want to be a basketball player, right? Well, your odds are pretty good to get into pro basketball compared to the elite of MotoGP. We got 17 riders on the grid. At least you got teams out there across the United States and Europe and beyond that, have 30, 40 players on each team. It really is kind of an elite group, isn't it?
I think in the States alone, just in the AMA series at the top of the line, in the United States of America, you might have 9 or 11 kids getting paid to ride the motorcycle.
Sure.
11.
Yeah.
You know, that's Josh. That's, you know, whatever. Blah, 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 and that's it. You know, Zimke, yeah. And Boston. That's it. And Hayden and Ben Young, is it?
Blake Young,
sorry. But yeah, I mean, 17 guys on the grid over there, and a lot of those kids are paying for the rides on the B teams. They bring the sponsors from, you know, from Spain or from Italy, I guess, is what I understand. But yeah, it's a very difficult elite thing. And I think the Carl Abrahams, you know, are out there with a little bit of money. But I've always said that the kids with the money, if the guys actually ride the motorcycle, you can't take anything away from them because, you know, he's out there dicing with the back of the pack, but they're still really decent riders. And even though his dad's paying for it all, it's still him on the bike, you know? So I think that is definitely, I mean, how many teams in the NBA are there in the States? I mean, how many different players on the bench included that are on the payroll? Yeah. There's a very, very few people getting paid to ride motorcycles, aren't there?
Yeah. And frankly, until the economy picks up, we're not going to see a whole lot more. Did you manage to catch the race last weekend?
Oh, my God. I was beaming. I was beaming for the whole day, that wet race, the MotoGP, rather. I showed it to, like, 3 people. I watched it 4 times,
nice.
Which is about, you know, what, 4 times an hour and a half if you watch it online.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved it so much. And Vero, actually, if she's probably sleeping by now, but I showed it to her and I listened to her watch it and watched her expression on Skype while she watched it while I worked and listened to the audio of it. And she was jumping off the couch. Like, she was so excited and it was so fun because that's the way I felt. But, you know, you're like, come on, Ben. And he catches Nikki and then he falls. It's like,
yeah.
God, Simoncelli, you knew was going to fall.
Yep.
There's no chance that kid was going to finish that race. But
I think the one that killed me was it, because I kept sitting there and I was like, all right, we've got this one. Okay, Ben, you got it. You're going to nail it. You're going to be on the box. No. And then Nikki, and then you're no. And then the one that really hurt,
Colin.
I'm like, dude, you're going. And then I basically just hung my head. I'm like,
oh, I know. I mean, can you imagine Colin Edwards on the podium with Tech 3? That would have been fun for all involved. You know, it's like it legitimizes him being there and everything. And you saw Herve Poncharella. I might be getting that wrong, something of that name.
Yep.
He, in the recap of the races, they show him going like to the television screen. And you don't know if it's for Crutchlow or for Edwards. But at one point, he just kind of almost flipped off the screen and said, "Fucking idiot." You know, like, and I'm like, well, who is that for? You know, was that for Colin or was that for Crutchlow? But either way, you could see that underneath that smiling persona, he was disappointed that they had the opportunity and didn't take, you know, didn't actually see that. But to be completely fair, you saw those tires were bald. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, they're riding around on bald slicks, not even with rubber, but on the cords, which means there's no real traction, even in at all. Like, you know, there's no rubber left. So those guys were skating around and it was just a matter of, you know, time before every single guy would have fallen. I think it's just, they ran out of laps, but I thought Ben was going to do it. And I was so stoked for him and Tom Houseworth and Woody and all those guys. It would have been fun to see him up on the podium so early in the season.
Yeah, no doubt. And there's certainly no doubt that the guys out there would have liked to have an option for, to not necessarily run with the soft reins, but unfortunately they didn't. And I did talk to Ben about that a bit. It was one of those weekends that you kind of look at the three classes, and to be perfectly honest, the GP guys had it the worst. We had relatively consistent rain consistent drizzle during the 125s. During the Moto 2, it was not raining, but the track was dry and damp. And then you had also during the GP race, there was, you know, rain that escalated throughout. Backed off and then kicked in again, and that's the worst kind of conditions. Have you done a bunch of heavy rain racing in the past?
I've done pretty much everything at least once, if not twice. It's the rain is a funky thing because the rain, you approach it, and I'm no expert, but you just have to sort of smooth it out and actually use your brain, because if you're later in the years, I've become more competent with the rear brake usage, and a lot of the rain stuff can be taking the load off the front, trail braking into the corners, and if you can kind of charge in there and scrub that speed with the rear brake and crack the throttle, which tensions the chain, and roll off out of the corner, you can do pretty good. Even coming from California, there was a couple times over the years in the AMA or whatever, where because we don't race on the roads in the rain.
Sure.
But I was like, I was surprised that it's like, well, why are they going so fucking slow? Like, why, you know, not that I won anything, but there was a few times when I was in the full blown AMA superbike race on a super stock bike. And I was like in fourth or fifth or sixth or something back at Road America. One day it rained cats and dogs. And I just couldn't believe how slow they were all going. It's just a finesse thing. You know, it's just kind of a, you want to get in and slow it down and get out. And like, again, I'm no expert. I'm coming from California. I have very little experience, but I can remember it being more mental. Like they said on TV in the interviews this last week, it's way more mental than it is anything. You just don't want to lose that front. It's so easy to just go, oh, trail break, you know, you're done. And you can, I don't know anything about pushing the front or sliding the front in the rain. It's just, that's not in my vocabulary, but it's possible that somebody like Lorenzo can actually push the front in the rain. I was mostly just trying to keep it in line. And then you see this guy from Japan back at, in the English race a couple of years ago in World Superbike sliding the hell out of that thing. And eventually fucking crashed or something, you know, it's like, but it was cool to see somebody backing it in so hard in the rain. I didn't know.
You're talking about Kianari. That in fact, I need to go watch that particular race again because that one was completely mental. Do you have any plans this year for World Endurance stuff, or is that being worked out at all?
Well, I've offered my services to the Germans again for this season, and they effectively said, "Look, last year we kind of needed you for a couple things, but everyone else on the team paid to be there."
Okay.
And they're paying like 3,000 euros.
Yeah.
Which I just don't get that. You know, I don't get paying to ride somebody else's motorcycle because at the end of the day, they're advertising for it. So I don't know. It's possible Rico and his chief mechanic, which was my mechanic for the last year, the whole year, they were in LA this last month. We had a great time. They were here for about 10 days or something, and we showed them all around and did the whole thing. And they seemed kind of keen on having me over for some World Endurance stuff, but they need the money, because if I take a slot, let's say, because a lot of the guys with money are not necessarily the fastest guys.
Hmm.
If he was to say, well, we've got a fast team and we've got a slow team, and the slow team pays for the fast team, they could call me up at a 24-hour and say, well, be the reserve or be the third guy or whatever it is, which is entirely possible. But I know that he was expecting to get about $3,000 ahead for each rider from them. It's like, what's, you know, last year I did it for free. You know, I actually paid myself to get there. I said, oh, look, I'll just get there. You just take care of the tires and the fuel and all that. 24-hour race, you can imagine the expense.
Is it possible that after last year, maybe he's just looking for a security deposit?
Oh, nice.
You're the only one I can get away with saying that to.
Well, we spoke about that this last week when he was here, Rico, and he's like, dude, we all crashed. Like, he was totally, we were over some beers late one night. And I said, I felt so bad. I crashed your bike last year. And he's like, dude, I crashed the week before. And, you know, he's got all these pins in his back. You know, he crashes too. Everybody crashes. It's just part of the sport.
Did you tear those boys up when they were down in LA?
We had some fun. We had some fun. There was a couple nights where we had the cocks out trying to dissuade. You know, when you play pool, billiards, okay, and you try to distract your opponent when they shoot pool.
You did.
Well, at one point, you got to pull your cock out and lay it on the table to try to, like, well, you know, to put it in the way of the white ball or whatever. That happened eventually. So you asked the question, and the answer is, yeah, it got silly. They were pissing over the balcony, and you know the balcony. You've been in this house.
Yeah.
There's pictures that they absolutely refused to duplicate to leave behind in the United States. They said, look, we can't, you know, we got to delete these from the USB stick, you know.
And I know for a fact that you still figured out a way to get those anyway, didn't you?
I do. Actually, I did.
I knew it.
I've got every single photo. How did you know that? That's weird.
Dude, this is not rocket science. You're my little brother.
All right. Not much younger, though, actually.
Funny. All right. Well, what else is going on? You know, do you feel like the clock is starting to tick down at this point? Is there a voice in the back of your head that's like, okay, there's things I have to do. I got to do this, this, and this. But in the meantime, can you kind of hear an engine, almost like tinnitus, if you will, revving up in the back of your head?
Well, that's coming. The problem with getting paid three times a year, because, you know, I'm doing the Macau race, this TT, and I'm doing a couple other things, is I go from 50 cents in my checking account to X number of dollars, you know, overnight. Like, literally within 9 days, I go from zero to rich.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, well, you know, I don't want to drink the thing away. I don't want to, like, fuck up the – I don't want to spend the money unwisely. So I'm revamping the studio at home, and I put a bunch of foam on the wall. I got a new LCD projector. I've got this little, you know, I'm getting a brand new 17-inch MacBook Pro with the Thunderbolt. I'm getting a brand new cinema display, you know, like all the external hard drives, all this stuff, because I've sold off some stuff back because it was the older technology. And to make a long story short, too late, I am also excited about the studio aspect of the filmmaking stuff. And I'm just now finishing up a video for Joe Rocket. Joe Rocket Leathers and Helmets, they, you know, hired me to make this this Canyon video that also stars Melissa Paris. And it should be fun, you know, to watch. It should be good. I'm trying to make it a little bit it's 6 minutes now, and I'm trying to get it down more to 3.5 minutes, because I think it's easier to watch something at work when you're hiding from your boss that's 3.5 minutes than 6 or 7.
Well, so, do two versions. Do an extended mix and do the quickie style.
It's possible. We could do a director's cut or something. But
You know, that's interesting. I knew that she had done a Canyon shoot, but I didn't know that that was the project you were working on, the one that you told me about and the one you've been working on for weeks now.
It's been weeks, and I'm the guy making it. Yeah. I'm actually editing the thing. I've shot most of it. I shot most of it and was there for the shoot with her, blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, so I'm trying to get that behind me so that I can concentrate 100%. You know, like I said, 7 weeks left is enough time to really focus away from flying a mouse and your artistic side of your brain, and instead you know, put your balls out there and say it's time to go fucking kick, you know, go tackle that mountain.
Yep.
Because it's as we know, and you know what, this is going to happen in a couple weeks from now. We'll be talking, and I'll be after the first practice or the second practice, and it's all going to be fun and games until we actually throw a leg over that thing and go down Bray Hill with Mick Doohan and Nikki Hayden watching this year.
I know. Yeah, in fact, I also know, and I can't disclose yet, what bike he's going to be riding around there, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's serious business, man. There's no joke. I can only remember what I said before, and it's not even that it's in my memory. It's just I remember saying it to you, how it becomes very real very soon, very quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, and my full intent over there, if I can manage to actually financially make it over, is to stay the hell out of your hair.
No, and, come on.
I'm going to be chill, dude. And you got business to do, and you know, if you need my support, as a friend, you're more than welcome to give me a holler. But I'm just going to be chasing your girl all the time.
Of course, you are going, right?
I am. I'm just money's tough for me. Us pseudo motor generals don't get sponsored for things like this. I've got ferry. I've got a place to stay in Douglas. All I need to do is figure out how to finance my plane tickets and that stuff.
Which is about 900 plus 300, so you're about 1,300 bucks, right?
Yeah, it'll get done, but I'm going to be there for the whole fortnight. So,
well, why don't we put it out to all the peeps on Facebook and on the Motopod that if anybody wants to contribute, you know, 75 bucks or something, we can make this happen. Yeah. So tomorrow we're going to see the feature length edition of the Charge video, the Mark Neal of Faster DVD fame.
Really? So just so you know, and this is on the air, Mark is also going to be on this week's show. So you tell me this now, and I'm going to be jealous. Where are you going to go see it? Is they debuting it somewhere down in L.A.?
It's a private screening of 10 to 15 or less people in Culver City at somebody's home theater. And we're going to go have a look at it. I think it's 80 to 90 minutes long. And Mark and I met for a beer, like, what, last night or the night before? And he says, you know, he's totally happy with it. He says, Mark, Ewan McGregor, is it? Mm-hmm. Brought in a very energetic performance. The score turned out better than he thought it would. It was really fantastic. And he said everybody kind of it's a nice film. So anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing that tomorrow at 4 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Very cool. I think if I catch a flight, I can come.
Of course. I'm going to try to get like 10 copies of the thing once it's, you know, mass produced, and I'll send you a copy.
Well, yeah, I'd actually pay Mark, because the man does a lot of work for a little reward. Thank you. Maybe we'll do a giveaway on the show, but yeah. Is there anything else? And, you know, I thought at first I was like, you know, I'd love to talk to Mark for another one of our 2-hour jaunts, but I know that, and dude, I could essentially do you. I could do you live, dude. I could chat with you live for hours on end.
Well, you particularly liked the R6 love on Facebook, didn't you?
I was amused.
I mean, that's one of those things you never know what's anybody, but it's actually, we have about 17 likes and about 18 or 21 comments on it, which is, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, it was pretty good.
Yep.
What was it that I said, like, very simply? Is it wrong to be in love with a motorcycle? Why does everybody laugh when I say that?
I think, you know what? I think we're...
Oh, well, I'm the only one.
No, you and Charlie Sheen.
Oh, don't you dare put me in the same sentence. Dude, that guy had like a 5 minutes of crazy fame like at the end of his career. What a nut. Anyway, hey, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Wouldn't it be cool to ask, to pose the question to Ben Spies next time you speak to him? How much has Tom Houseworth and Woody on his team that went to World Superbike from AMA, then to Tech 3, and then to MotoGP, how much has he affected that, having that crew so close by to communicate with about setup in three different teams, three different motorcycles? Could he have done the world championship in 1 year? Could he have moved from the Tech 3 to the factory team in 1 year and now have nearly put it on the podium in the very first year in Yamaha had he not taken Tom Houseworth and Woody from the States with him? I'm very curious to hear his answer on that.
I suspect that he will hear that asked by you on here, and I think it's great. And if not, if he doesn't run to the end of the show, I will make sure that gets back to him so he can ponder it. Does he have your email address?
I don't know. We're kind of passing friends back in the day, but not at the moment. No.
Okay. I'll figure out a way either to get an answer in voice or an answer in writing for you.
Listen, you don't need to. He doesn't need to give me an answer. It's just something I'd like to hear him say publicly someday, because I think it's a really cool thing that he's been able to take his boys from the States over there. And I'm just kind of curious what he thinks about the likelihood of him getting a world championship in 1 year without them. Like, could he have adapted to the Italians in World Superbike the first year? Could he have adapted to Tech 3 mechanics in the second year straight away? And then, you know, would he feel as comfortable with a new crew at the next Yamaha team? I mean, it's an opportunity almost for him to say, look, I couldn't have done it without Tom Howsworth, which would be fun to hear, because it would really demonstrate how important the crew is and how important the support system is around all of us riders. When you can communicate well what the bike's doing, what it needs, and all that kind of crap. And not like I'm any freaking expert, but I know Tom Howsworth a little bit, and I know Woody a little bit, and I think that it's fantastic and remarkable that they've all been able to do that together, and it's such a solid unit of three. You know, I'm just kind of curious what his – if you were to pose a question, says, if you did not have Tom Howsworth and Woody, could you have pulled it off flat out?
Yeah, and the point is very, very good, and the question's absolutely incredible. And I think one of the things, and this is going to be just kind of a more generic thing, that for those folks out there listening to the show and haven't raced or been involved in the racing business before, is the level of support that you receive. Okay, and Mark, pull yourself back to your club racing days when you were driving a pickup truck or something to the track, and you were unloading your own shit and putting up your canopy and wrenching on your own bike. To take that extra step where you actually had people doing some of that for you, to actually preparing the bike, to providing you with a really good kit, to the point where all you had to focus on at the higher levels was, I'm going to sit here, zone out, think about the track, count the turns in my head, run through laps in my head, and all I have to do is take five steps over, get on the bike, and go out and race. The transition from the level of support you have from the professional rider back to the club punter is incredible. And when you talk about somebody like a Tom Howsworth supporting Ben Spies that can actually understand what Ben is saying without Ben even saying a word, it would be key.
Absolutely. The moment for me was when I went from having Suzuki support, where they gave me two bikes. Dunlop gave me all the tires I could burn, and this as a privateer, and Yoshimura gave me a couple titanium exhausts, et cetera, to the next year, and I got placed on a Suzuki team. That was the biggest jump of where you consciously see that, well, God, I don't have to do this anymore. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to take the bikes out of the truck. I need to show up, you know, 2 hours later, just in time for the practice, as long as I have time to stretch and put the leathers in the boots, because the boots always take longer than you remember, and the gloves, you don't want to be late. When you know, that's the kind of stupid shit that happens when you're first starting out professionally. It's like, well, you think you have time. Well, I've got time to put it on. And next thing you know, you might even miss the beginning of the practice. Anyway, but later on, when you get used to it, you just realize there's a job to do, you know, like there's a job at hand, and you're not so everybody wants the same result. Everybody wants to do as best as we possibly can do. And you don't feel like a superstar. You don't feel like something special. You don't feel like a prima donna. It's more like, no, they're doing their part, and I'm going to do my part, and we're going to do this together. They respect what I bring to the table, and I completely respect their expertise, and there really isn't, even though the rider gets most of the credit, it's not the case in reality. It's a team effort in every sense of the word, and they do their thing. And without them, you could not do it. Without you, they could not do it, because they could put some schmuck on the bike like myself and do nothing. You know, all their hard work would be nothing. But you couldn't get a knucklehead crew with no experience, and they're all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and they think they're cool, but they don't have the experience. It's a disaster.
Absolutely. You know,
they will not have the tire warmers on there. They will not have the bike prepared. They would be falling apart, and it won't look clean. It'll be blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm rambling on, but as I always do. But it is truly a team effort, and I think there's a mutual respect there, and you can't take anything away from anybody. So the question to Ben Spies would be kind of interesting just to hear his answer about – how important was it to have the same nucleus from AMA straight into Yamaha Factory MotoGP? The same kids. I mean, the same exact actors, the same players. That's. I'd love to hear his answer to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And your point is well taken. I mean, the teams that actually gel really well, it's pretty much as a band of brethren in the riders, at least when you're in a battle conditions, if you will, in racing, it's a group of peers for the most part. There are always tiers. You know, the guy that's just, you know, washing off the bodywork is probably going to be a little bit down the pipe, but they're all contributing. I will let you go, Mark. well, figuratively only. And we should chat soon. So let's wrap this up and I will talk soon. I hope you do well and I hope your preparations over the next few weeks. And of course, I will talk to you between now and then because we talk all the time anyway. But in the meantime, just for the show, I bid you a fair adieu.
Speak soon, dude. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
Cheers, buddy. Bye.
All right. And of course, and as always, it is a pleasure having Mark on the show. I hope you guys were amused by that. I know that I always enjoy talking to him and you guys out there always enjoy listening to it. On other news, of course, this last weekend, we also had Aston World Superbike and it was a pretty cool weekend, wasn't it, Jules?
It was great. Great. I didn't see the World Super Sport race. Unfortunately, I ran out of time. I had a very busy weekend, but the two World Superbike races were just amazing. I mean, especially race 2. Race 2 was just awesome.
And it was very, very cool, actually, having decent weather all the way through the weekend.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And the circuit, as we know, has changed over the years, and it's kind of shortened down. It's maybe not the... I still wonder these days if it needs to retain the name the Cathedral. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it doesn't really deserve it, because it used to be, you know, the Cathedral.
There's a lot of people there that are probably going to go, well, no, because it's still in the same damn spot. But anyway, your front two rows, because I don't want to wander all the way through Super Bowl, because you got to get out of Dodge, Jules. Your front row, Carlos Checa, Jakob Smirts, as always, qualifying well. Eugene Laverty, which was great. Noriyuki Haga, also in the front row. Second row, Jonathan Rea, Max Biaggi, Tom Sykes, and Marco Melandri.
Yeah. Well, I do want to mention the Super Bowl 2 in ninth position was Leon Camier, who there was a hilarious little video. I think it's like
yes.
10 seconds long of so they were asking him what happened. He's like, oh, well, somebody got in front of me, and they're like, well, who? And you can see him pointing to the other side of the garage over there, that guy.
So this is the transcript of the conversation. We'll have a link to the video on YouTube about this. And I certainly can't do it justice, obviously. I've not got a Brit accent, nor can I, you know, even come close, but with the freneticism that he had and the pissed offness that he was showing. But something like, that's him. Yeah, that's him fucking around. He does a quick lap, and he just stays in the middle of the track, and then, yeah, him.
That's awesome. That's very good.
Only in Americanese. I definitely had to look that up, but I was amused.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's just quickly talk about race 1. I do want to get you on your way, Jules. It was big fun for me to actually get the opportunity once again to see races from Assen. I'm going to just touch in both races on the podium that we can talk about things that happen outside of there, because with all the interviews that we've got, it's going to be a long show. But your top three in race 1 were Jonathan Rea, Max Biaggi, and Carlos Checa.
And Carlos Checa did not look like he was going to be podiuming.
He certainly didn't. And it was clearly one of those races where he was going to have to work at it. But he's got this determination and smoothness that seemed to belie his years at this point. And I keep saying this over and over, but it's almost like the guy is getting younger.
Maybe it is the experience, though. I mean,
absolutely.
He is able to save the tires and ride the tires to the end, no matter what he put on. He actually switched. He was one of the few people who switched to softer tires for the second race, because most of the guys were tearing their soft tires up in the first race.
Yep, no doubt.
The guys who came out on the soft tires, anyway.
Sure. And we did have a few guys out that were quite unfortunate, including both Sylvain Gontoli and Jakob Smerts, who Jakob went down in the final chicane and Sylvain had nowhere to go and basically tried to jump him, which didn't work out.
No.
The rest of your top 10 in race one, Marco Melandri, Michel Fabrizio, Troy Corser, Eugene Laverty, Ruben Chaus, Ayrton Badovino, and Mark Aitchison. That's a great finish for Mark, frankly.
It is. I did also want to mention that Tom Sykes figured in the front for a long time, and he was the guy who was running on the soft tire. And the second race, he went the hard tire. He ended up finishing 14th in race one.
Yep. We did have a bunch of guys that were actually out in race one. A little bit surprising, but I mean, 12 through 21 were all out. If I'm rushing this, Jules, you can slow me down. Feel free to. World Superbike Race 2, the same three gentlemen were on the box, although in a different order, with Max Biaggi as the sandwich meat, if you will. that being Carlos Checo on the top, Max Biaggi, and Jonathan Rea.
But it wasn't really looking this way. It really looked like Max Biaggi had this race. And
it did.
Carlos Checo, man, that was probably one of the coolest last laps. And of course, Aston always has good last laps. But that was really just masterful, masterful.
Yeah, the term that came to mind as soon as you said that was grim determination. It was like, yeah, this is my race and I'm going to win it and you'll just have to deal with it.
Right. Yep. It was right before the chicane on the penultimate lap and boom. And then he just tore off. Biaggi definitely tried to come back, but it wasn't to be. It was nice to see that Biaggi didn't completely self-destruct again. He recovered quickly.
That is the exact term I was going to use. He recovered, yeah. If not, one of the things that James and I talked about that James found kind of interesting was apparently Max and Marco had a bit of, I think the term James used was a hug-in on Friday. And he used that term multiple times, and knowing James and sort of, a wink over the phone, I think take that for what it was, but they apparently had a little chat and sit down and, maybe a lap dance, but they figured it out and got along. And then James went over, interviewed Max, and Max said, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. And I shouldn't be parking in the middle of the track. And what did he do later on the weekend, but repeat those same transgressions. So,
I want to mention also that Dennis Noyes wrote an amazing 3-part series on Biaggi called, Sympathy for the Devil, which we'll link to in the show notes because it's really worth reading. I'm not going to go through everything he says because we kind of touched on it over the last two shows, but
sure,
really, really interesting.
I guess I should go read that, shouldn't I?
It's an amazing compilation that really gives you the entire career of Max Biaggi in one light. You know how Dennis Noyes, he's freaking amazing at being able to just pull everything together and connect the dots.
Dennis has a knack of nailing it.
Yep. That's another way of putting it. He nailed it.
Sure. One of the things that I would like to note from race one, but maybe even more so in race two, was the aggressiveness of the passing. There was some incredible passing that was going on in race
Melandri.
Two.
Laverty.
Yep. Johnny Rea. Yeah.
Johnny Rea. Well, Johnny Rea, of course. But Laverty and Melandri were just brutally – I mean, clean. Mm-hmm. Definitely, they were clean passes, but they were just – really ruthless.
Yeah, and Norrie basically just got pushed back by, and he's no slouch and he's still up there trying hard, and he had a great run off the beginning of the first race. But I mean, these guys are out for blood, but not out for blood and I'm going to kill you sort of way, more of a elbowing aside.
Yeah.
But certainly a good race. Marco Melandri was running quite well and unfortunately crashed out with about 6 laps left to go. It does change the points championship around a bit farther down in the field, but it really what it does solidifies Checa's lead at the top by some 43 points. So you've got your top three, Checa, Biaggi, Melandri, with a fairly large spread down to 45, 46 points. And who would have thought that at the age Carlos Checa is, that he's, 6 races in on his way potentially, we don't want to use the actual term world champion, but, a lot can happen for sure.
I mean, we've had 6 races. He's won 4.
Yeah. So
and he's been on the podium in all six.
Yeah, well done and a great start. You know, Leon Haslam was running.
I don't know why he bring age up.
Dude, I'm old.
I know, but listen, but Spies is the anomaly now. Think about it. Right?
That's true. Okay,
it was
true.
It was Bayless, Spies, then Biaggi, and now Checa.
Well, go back even further, and Ben isn't that old, or that young.
No, I know. But I'm just saying it. You know, like he is the anomaly.
True. Well, and
among these old guys, so
yeah, and certainly one to he did something nobody did, is come to your rookie season and take the world championship in a rather convincing manner, and rather convincing being the key.
Yeah.
Anything else on World Superbike Race 2? I'm trying to hustle you out of here, Jules.
Keep going.
All right, World Super Sport. Three races in one. A bit of a mess, and I'm going to zip through this, but the first race that we had running, we were about 5 or 6 laps in, and unfortunately, during that period of time, we had Lucas Gazza, Chaz Davis at the front, Florian Marino challenging, as well as Sam Lowe. Sam Lowe's coming out of, I forget which turn it was, but suffered a tremendous high side, which knocked him uncanny and unconscious for a select period of time, caused an immediate red flag, and there was a long, long gap. Eventually, he is relatively okay.
I think he broke his collarbone, right?
Broke his collarbone. He is pretty loopy. We did eventually get the race back underway, and we were about 3 or 4 laps in. And two additional gentlemen, Lund and I'm trying to remember who, Marco Herman from Slovenia, I believe it was, got together as well. And once again, we had a red flag. Those guys came out with some injuries, but nothing catastrophic. And we had a long wait once again. Finally, we got things underway. Chaz Davis, Lucas Gasse, all those guys were right up there battling well. In the end, it came down to Chaz Davis, Fabien Fauré, and Brock Parks on the box. Lucas Gasse went out with 9 laps left with a crash. Florian Marino was out as well, 8 laps to the end. And, Jules, you're just going to have to watch it.
I know. But what's really amazing is how Brook Parks is just quietly.
I said the same thing to James. Yeah,
he's just sitting right there, 3 points from the top. You know.
Yeah, and James said to me, he said, you know, he probably shouldn't be in super sport because he's got the chops to run in a superbike team, but he's never had the right equipment. And at the same time, though, I'm sorry I don't have this for you guys. The connection just wasn't good enough. But we then got off on this tangent talking about Johan Lescaurs, how maybe he should have stayed in World Supersport because he could have nailed a world championship if his injury hadn't sidelined him last year.
Mm.
And Brock essentially has taken his place in that team. And he's on the ZX-10R in its teething year, although clearly it is a good bike, it's still under development. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Yeah.
What a tight championship, though, now, because of Skass's DNF.
Absolutely. 5 points different. But it's kind of the weird thing about Supersport is, you know, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression because they only run one race a weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And the cool thing is, and this is actually going to change things a lot, because the one thing that we noticed in the World Superbike races, and we knew this from last year, and they really, since Phillip Island, haven't had a chance to exercise this, is the RSV4's, kick-ass power and the ability that it has to pass people down the straight. We're going to Monza next in a few weeks' time. And that track is by far a top-speed track, and I love watching races from there.
I hate it.
Really?
Yeah, I hate Monza.
Why?
Because somebody always gets hurt there. It's. I just don't think that people should be racing there anymore. It's a dangerous track.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm gonna watch anyway.
Oh yeah, I'll be watching. It's a historic track, and it looks beautiful. I just think that there's some corners where they're very fast, and there's not much runoff.
it leaves a bitter taste in your mouth.
And there's that chicane in the beginning where, you know, people just always breaking their ankles and stuff. So,
or worse.
Or worse.
Or worse. Let's go ahead and roll the quick bit that I have with James Whittam.
Great.
See, I said it right, folks. and then we'll come back and finish the show up.
Kind of ground piece. You have to, you know, really take your life in your hands a little bit, you know, and be a bit brave and very aggressive. And for me, the question mark is if Hopkins is prepared to do that. Speed isn't a problem, but aggression and kind of commitment might be a problem, I think.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see his first couple of laps at Cadwell going over the mountain or out at Alton.
Yeah, I tell you what, I really hope he does do it. I hope he sort of takes the ball by the horns and sticks it in there, because I like Hopkins and I know how quick he is. You know, he picked up a GP bag a couple of weekends ago, put it in the top 10, and there's no question in his ability he can do that. And the championship, you know, big championship, it's better for somebody like that in there. But you know, you need to be. It's not about speed at Cadwell. It's not about speed at Knockhill. It's about sheer kind of aggression and kind of commitment. And that's what I think I need to see from him.
Yeah, precision also. And that's something that you can only learn at those circuits because they are so tight and twisty.
Yeah, I mean, the thing he's got going for me is the fact the team's been there before. They know the sayings. He's going to be on a bike that's, you know, a good bike and with settings that are capable around that circuit. But I still say that, you know, you get a GP rider back in World Superbike and it takes them 3 laps to get going, like Melandre. Mm-hmm. In Britain, it's even worse than that. If you can't stick it in there on a cold tyre, you know, on a cold circuit, you know, with, you know, mud on the circuit and flipping, but you need to almost take your brain out of that first lap. You know, you can't settle down. And if you can do it, you've got the speed for sure.
Indeed. Changing gears, and then I'll let you go, sir. You're on the chat show tour once again with Carl Fogarty, are you not?
Yeah, we've got 1 to 6. About 6 dates coming up in spring, early summer. Well, we did a 6 day tour end of last year, September, October, and I tell you what, it went so well. We pretty much sold the places out on the. I think of the six, 4 were sold out. We really enjoyed it. Foggy is a funny guy. You know, I can stand up there and I can talk and I've got a few tales and people like it. But Foggy, I never realised just what a funny, kind of quirky he was. And he was good. We really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was prodding his manager to bring you guys over so that you could do the broadcast at Miller Motorsports Park and then book you guys in Salt Lake City. And I said, I can almost guarantee you we can sell it out.
I'd love to do. I mean, the thing is, I hate to say this to you, but I love the States. I've been there riding a couple of times. I've rented road bikes, done the 66 thing, and the States are good. And, you know, it's the only place in the world a Brit can go to and kind of guarantee that people like him. If we go to Europe, everybody hates Brits. Brits are hated people, you know what I mean? Spanish people don't like Brits. Yanks actually quite like him, so it's a good place for us to go to.
Well, maybe if we can work that out. In the meantime, you and I are going to see if we can figure out the newly technologically enabled Carl Fogarty can join us for a chat.
Yeah, I tell you what, Carl, not only is he kind of using his phone more, but he's tweeting and he's doing all sorts of stuff. So he's a good guy, but he's kind of a quiet guy. But on the chat shows, we brought a kind of personality out that I've never seen before. And I've known the guy for like 25 years, you know.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if I'd say anything. I'd just get you two at each other's old tales and let you go.
Well, that's what it's about. That's what it's about, Jim.
Yep. All right. Well, listen, James, once again, I greatly appreciate you talking to me post-race from Assen. And you enjoy and see if you can't get Jack up in the plane, man. I'm waiting for that.
No, Jack's coming in the plane. But Jack, I've actually worded him up and he's keen to do a talk with you. And Jack, I tell you what. I mean, I'm a little bit kind of quirky and I'm a little bit Westfield, but Jack has the knowledge going back for years. And he knows, I tell you what, not only road racing, but he can pull kind of motocross, especially world championship stuff up going back 25, 30 years. You need to talk to him.
Absolutely. Well, send me his email in an email and I'll see what I can work out. And I will talk to you soon, sir.
Cheers, Jim.
All right. Cheers. Good night.
All right, many, many thanks again to James, and we'll have more from him. It's very cool that he's letting us talk to him after each World Superbike race weekend. I can't, even imagine how pumped I am. No, I can, but you can't even imagine how pumped I am about that. And we'll get a chance to hang out face-to-face at the TT. This weekend, we do have the first British Superbike race of the year at Brands Hatch. The Indy configuration, I'm not a super fan of it. It's a sub-1-minute lap, but you get 40 bikes out there, and you start getting guys lapped in, you know, 4 or 5 laps. Will be an opportunity to see people like John Hopkins, for example, at the circuit. And he and Josh Brooks and Chiannari should all be up at the front. Hopefully Michael Laverty's on my fantasy team, as well as
Rudder. Rudder.
Huh? Yeah, Rudder. I've got Rudder as well.
Okay, there you go.
But certainly looking forward to it. And as I know you guys in the UK are, and it sounds like the weather will be cooperating as well. Finally, Jules, I guess we should talk about this contest, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we didn't forget. Don't worry. we've got the contest for the GoPro, and we're going to do the drawing right now.
And I do want to say many thanks to Matt at GoPro and GoPro for their support for this, and perhaps we'll work with them more in the future.
All right.
Is there a big red button you push? Or green button?
Pretty much it's the return button. I'm gonna push it, and you're hearing some noises now.
Okay.
All right, ready? Okay, here we go. And the GoPro winner is Paul Hayward. Paul Hayward from Australia, it looks like.
Nice.
Paul, all right. Paul, congratulations.
Congratulations, Paul.
I'm going to email you, and then you can email us your shipping address, and we'll get that thing off to you as soon as possible.
That's cool.
All right.
Congratulations, Paul. It was a lot of fun. We got a ton of entries, and many thanks to all of you that sent stuff in, especially the little notes that you sent off, and we'll try and continue to do stuff like that in the future.
Definitely.
All right.
And thank you, GoPro. And thanks, Jim. And everybody have a good night.
All right, let's get out of here, dude.
Ciao.
Later.
I'm going to do it live, man.
Oh, you're going to?
I'm going to do it live.
We're doing it live.